From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Somewhere over the rainbow.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles. And this is a show where every week we deal with issues relating to mental health from a very holistic perspective, which means body, mind, and spirit, and creating a sense of balance in our lives so that we are living more fully, more at peace, and more productively and with more joy. This topic tonight, actually, tonight's show I'm dedicating to my mother, whose 80th birthday is coming up, and family's congregating in Florida next weekend to celebrate her 80th birthday. My mom is somebody who is always on the go and very much a role model for just going for what she wants. And that's something she's always done. So the topic of tonight's show is honoring our parents as we all age. And I put it that way because I'm 53, she's 80, and we live in a society where life expectancy is longer. I'm part of the baby boom generation, which means there's going to be more baby boomers caring for parents who are living longer, and more baby boomers becoming seniors and living longer, which means it's time to revisit the issue of elders in our society and how we honor them and how they build themselves up to earn respect and honor or not. This is a live call-in show. I won't be having a guest on tonight, so if you're in the Phoenix area and feel like calling in and participating in this, if you have something to say or have some questions, the local number in Phoenix is 480-874-1311. That's 480-874-1311. And if you're listening via the Internet, as I know a few of you are, the toll-free line is 1-888-437-7660. That's 888-437-7660. So here we are, part of a culture now that has changed considerably from what it was like when our country was first being settled and through the 1800s and even a good part of the 1900s, where we were a rural society, and even those in the cities were multi-generational, living under one roof, and the rural families living on the farms were usually multi-generational, living under one roof, which meant that kids grew up interacting with their grandparents on a daily basis. It was part of a whole family system, and very often a lot of what they learned, for better or worse, was from not just their parents but their grandparents. And the grandparents were as much a part of raising of the children as the parents were. And that is still the case in many countries today and in many cultures within our own society. But what happened as people started leaving the farms, there were fewer family farms, people started getting into the cities, and after World War II, young couples were raising their children on their own, and all of a sudden we're creating a sense of separation between our elder community and our youth of the community, as well as the generation in the center. Retirement communities crept in, nursing homes, all these things. So instead of the continuity of life being witnessed by every generation from birth to death under one roof, it was separated. You know, children were born in hospitals and nobody got to see what it looked like until recently in our country when fathers, you know, about 20 or 30 years ago were allowed back into the delivery room. And death, aging, and illness was kept separate. You know, people keeping secrets about a diagnosis, not to concern the person who themselves were ill, or the kids not being told, you know, and the kids know what's going on. We all know that. And it's very disrespectful not to let the kids in on realities of what's happening under their own roof or within their own family system. So here you are now with, you know, grandparents often in retirement homes or nursing homes, and the kids visiting occasionally, if at all, a real sense of separation. So what happens to the elders? What happens to all the wisdom that is embodied in their lives? And, you know, where's the sense of completion for them and the sense of satisfaction of knowing that their life's experiences can be passed on to somebody who may find them meaningful? And sometimes that may not even be their own family. Sometimes it may be, you know, other people that get to know them and know that, you know, all of their life experiences, all of their wisdom, all of their successes as well as their failures are teaching somebody else, and may not even be their own family, their own blood, which is not terrible because it doesn't matter where our teachers come from, but the question is, are we honoring these people? I mean, we know that the Native Americans and a lot of Native cultures really have a sense of honoring the elders within their community. And a lot of their ceremonies, a lot of the hierarchy there are about honoring the elders, the spiritual elders as well as the earth bound elders. And, you know, in many circles, you know, that seems strange and wrong, the way, you know, Native Americans connect to nature and connect to the continuity of life, as I said earlier. And yet, as the essence of what they're doing is really something that we all need to take a second look at. So here we are today with kids who are being taught through every source imaginable, but not the elders of their own family, of their own clan, of their own sense of community. You know, they're being taught via television, comic books, films, and what are they being taught? What they're being taught even in the news because of what's going on in the world, but, you know, cause or effect, you know. Yes, there have been problems in the world always. Yes, there have been wars in the world always. But is this massive media blitz that we get in terms of our news really serving any of us to get so inundated? Is all of the the television, well, yes, radio too, I have to say that. You know, all of the anger and the hate and the judgment and the violence that is going on, you know, constantly on television programs, and I'm not even talking about, you know, a lot of the shows I enjoy watching, you know, in the evening hours and stuff. I'm talking about what they're seeing in the cartoons on Saturday morning. You know, superheroes blasting each other, video games where it's about kill or be killed, and that's what they're seeing also in reality on the news. That's what they're seeing in the movies with you know, all the violence. And if you think about it, the cartoons today are just more sophisticated, but when I was growing up in the 50s and early 60s, the cartoons we watched had just as much violence in it. I mean, if you just look at Roadrunner and who was it? Wile E. Coyote, you know? Someone was always getting bashed on the head, falling off a cliff, being pushed off a cliff. You know, Sylvester and Tweety, Bugs Bunny, and Elmer Fudd. It was a constant state of, you know, gags based on violence and humiliation. And what kind of message was that even giving us back in the 50s and 60s? I mean, even the black and white cartoons that didn't even have, you know, scripts, but just had classical music playing on it with the mice and the cats and stuff. It was a constant state of violence. And, you know, we think something's funny when it's really not serving that purpose. So the violence, you know, it's one thing to have it on, you know, shows that are meant for adults and, you know, I mean, there are enough adults that are being adversely impacted by it. But when we're talking about Saturday morning cartoons, when we're talking about shows that are meant for kids that are really based on kill or be killed, then that's where they're getting their lessons. That's where they're getting, you know, the life stories of people. Instead of learning to appreciate and value the elders in their own community who may have some stories to tell them and things to teach them that really and truly are storytelling, you know, that have messages for them and may be intriguing and may be inspiring and help them learn and help them learn what it's like to help within your own community, to be part of something bigger, to be of service, and to even learn from the fear that our elders had to deal with in wartime, whether it's World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, or even the kids today dealing with their parents who are in Iraq. So when I'm talking about this extended family and this continuity of life lessons, inspiration, it is so important today that we wake up to the resources that exist under our own roofs, within our own families, and make use of them, hear them, write them down. And so that's why my mother's birthday, 80th birthday, is the kickoff for tonight's show in terms of parents. So think for a minute about, as I started talking about parents, what came up for you? Was it, I don't want anything to do with my mom or dad, or maybe a bit of sadness because mom or dad's not around anymore, maybe they've passed away already, or maybe a sense of, I don't really even know my mom and dad. We've been in relationship all my life, and I don't really know who they are. There's no sense of connection. You know, or maybe you were abandoned at an early age, and mom or dad just wasn't around, and you got shuffled around to foster homes or, you know, relatives. So what comes up when you think about your own parents? What comes up when you think about the idea of your own aging process? Think about it for a minute. What was your mom or dad or both of them like? What kind of role models did they set for you? Was it something that you could truly learn from because it was so positive? Are you able to learn from it even if it was a negative, abusive type of situation? Have you been able to learn from it so you can move beyond it? Or are you still the victim? Are you still holding on to it? Has that been that difficult? I'm going to take a short break here, and whether you're going to call in or not tonight, I know that those of you that are listening out there are reacting. We're going to take a short break and come back and continue talking about my mom and your parents. Stay tuned. Truler. Tonight, we're talking about my mom and your mom and your dad. And, you know, when I left you thinking about what kind of association do you have with your parents? You know, something absent, something abusive, something loving, something nurturing. Is there some sense of appreciation that you've never expressed to them or feeling like you never heard that from them? There's so many issues. I mean, you know, I'm a therapist, and you know, a large percentage of what people are talking about in therapy most of the time is unresolved issues with mom or dad or both of them or their childhood or whatever. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. And again, this is a live call-in show, and everybody has something to say about their parents. So if you're in the Phoenix area, feel free to call in at 480-874-1311, 874-1311. If you're listening via the Internet, the toll-free number is 888-437-7660, 888-437-7660. So I was talking about, you know, the various experiences all of us have with our parents. Now, when I think back in my childhood, I could say, you know, all of the above was there. I mean, were my parents abusive? No, they weren't. Were they always exactly the parents that I needed or wanted at the time? No, they weren't. But were they? Did I know they always loved me? Yes, they did. And were they embarrassing sometimes? What kid would not say yes, mom or dad or both of them embarrass them often enough? But the clients that I see, you know, are often talking about, even at this age, I have one client who is in her 40s, and her mom's an alcoholic. And she's dealing with these issues and finally becoming aware that that's the case. And mom would rather stay in on Mother's Day to isolate and drink than go out for dinner with the kids and the grandkids and stuff. And my client and I had to talk a lot about that. You know, here is her mom and her kids' grandmother, and her kids are older now, who is choosing to shut down and not have a relationship with her grandkids. And what does the child, you know, the adult child in the middle of all this do with that? Do you keep forcing the issues? How many times can you, you know, confront the mom and try and get her to an AA meeting or whatever if mom's not ready to do that? You know, you can do an intervention, and if they're not ready, they're not ready. So sometimes dealing with a parent, no matter what age they are, means the adult kid, and even a minor kid sometimes, needing to create their own boundaries, needing to say, this is appropriate and this is okay, and this is not appropriate and this is not okay. So, you know, she got to the point where she was perfectly okay not being the ideal daughter and having the ideal relationship with her ideal mother and having the ideal Mother's Day dinner out with the whole family and stuff. And she went out and had a great time with her husband and kids and let mom sit in her own place and do what she wanted to do. And the win for her was that she didn't feel guilty about it. She came to a place of acceptance that this is the boundary that needed to be created. And it was the only thing that was going to work, and it was what her mom was telling her she wanted. And sometimes it's about dealing with the expectations we have, the hurt feelings, the sense of absence, and still, even as adults, trying to make it different in some way. Now, again, I believe in growth. I believe in change. I believe that people are capable of changing and growing, or I wouldn't do what I do for a living, and I wouldn't be on the air right now saying what I'm saying. But not everybody wants to do that. Not everybody's ready for it. And even as a therapist, I need to realize that sometimes I may have a client and I know that they're just not ready for the process that they came in saying they were ready for. So we may explore for a little while about, you know, what's the resistance here? Where does it come from? What are you afraid of? Or are you aware that there's resistance? you know, of coming late to every session, of not showing up, or, you know, forgetting your checkbook so that, you know, you're not taking responsibility for, you know, paying for the session and the time. What's the resistance about? Before just throwing it all out and saying, you know what, you're not ready. Do you really want to be here? If so, what do we want to do? And if not, you know, come back when you're ready. I'm not going to judge it. You know, there are things in my own life that I haven't always been ready to take a look at when, you know, it's been slapping me in the face. You know, as a therapist, just because I'm a therapist and sound like I have a lot of wisdom, which I know I do, and so do all of you, it doesn't mean I'm always listening to it. It doesn't mean I'm always tapping into it and making good use of it. You know, sometimes I need a good kick in the pants or slap in the face to wake me up to really take a firm look at what I'm doing that needs some change. So very often it's about, even with my own parents, I've had to set boundaries. Even as a kid, I knew when it felt safe to go to them, when it didn't. What things were their strengths? You know, I mean, there are certain kids that are wise, and they can tell that mom or dad have a certain strength in certain situations, and they just don't in others. And there are some kids that will keep being disappointed and being angry with them because mom or dad just aren't good at certain things, and they're going to get even with them because they're really hurt and angry. But there are some kids that are just wise and say, you know what, that's not one of their strengths. So I'm going to find another source when I need that. And hopefully it's a smart kid that's able to find another source for support or for guidance or for information when mom or dad may not be the one. As opposed to that kid shutting down completely and not even asking the questions. So that kid starts repressing, you know, all their needs and all their questions and all the stuff that's going on in their lives that would support their growth and their well-being. But because mom or dad may not be in a place, or they're too scary or threatening to go to mom or dad, you know, they just don't say anything, and they don't learn, and they isolate, and they hold things inside, and they grow up to be adults who repeat that in their own relationships. Now, speaking of my mother, which we started out the show with, I mean, again, my mom is one of the most compassionate, loving, caring people that I know. And I know that I got a lot of good things from my dad and a lot of good things from my mom. And, you know, like I always say to people, you take what you need and leave the rest. The stuff that's really inspiring, you work with. The stuff that really doesn't seem to work, then it doesn't mean you have to like it. Move past it and embrace the stuff that really does work. My mom's a worrier. She's as neurotic as you're going to find. She worries about everything. My sister-in-law may not be able to join us for the celebration in Orlando because she has a chest cold. My mom already thinks it's SARS. And my brother's going crazy because my mom's off on this tangent about my sister-in-law having SARS, you know, and she doesn't. She had a chest cold. But that's how far my mom's worrying will go. She'll look for something to worry about. Do I model that to a certain extent? Yes, I model that to a certain extent. To the extent that she does it, thank God, no. It's a place where she goes to that's familiar to her, and she's always been a worrier. And it's that worrying that gets her out to do things. She sees a problem, she wants to solve it. And it's one of her strengths when you get right down to it. So something that may drive us all crazy, which is her worrying, actually turns into something that's one of her strengths. She's a problem solver. She's a doer. She's a caretaker. And this is one of the beauties of her. And myself as a therapist and who I see myself as, and my brothers too, all of us seem to pick up that trait to a certain extent. And it's something to be grateful for. And yes, is the root of that somewhat in her worrying? Yes, it is. Does her worrying and her constant questioning and neurotic stuff drive me crazy at times? Yes, it does. Enough for me to hate her? No. Enough for me to love her? Well, she's lovable as she is anyway. And the neurotic stuff and the worrying is just part of who she is. And I set boundaries. When she's going over the same thing for the fifth time, I tell her that I will not listen to it again. Okay? I tell her to change the channel, get off of it. There's nothing that could be done, or she's totally off on the wrong track. And after a while, I was able to, I hate to put it this way, but retrain her, because very often she'll stop because she knows she's doing it. And that's part of our communication. That's part of the boundary setting that we have. So we're going to take another break here, set another boundary, and I'll be right back after these messages, so stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and tonight we're talking about my mother, your mother, your father, my father. We're talking about honoring our parents as we all age. In other words, how do we get past the stuff that has kept us blocked from our childhood and really see and understand our parents as they are, come to a place of acceptance, tap into those parts of them that have something to teach us and to pass on, to honor that, or to set the boundaries that we need to set if, as we're getting older, there's still something abusive going on. How do we start taking care of ourselves or, get them help? Again, this is a live show. If you feel like calling in and making a comment or participating in the conversation here, it's in Phoenix, it's 480-874-1311, and the toll-free number for elsewhere is 888-437-7660. When we took the break, I was talking about my mom being as neurotic and crazy-making as she is, and how that actually is the basis and foundation for one of her greatest strengths, which is her focus on the ability to find solutions to things and take care of and being of service. When she's worrying a lot, she can't sit still and just let something happen. She wants to help be part of the solution. And either she does it herself or she motivates others to participate in it, but that's just one of the things of many that I got from her and that I appreciate. So sometimes, as we're getting older, we're caught up in our own struggle about aging, and we don't realize that mom or dad may be having a harder time as they're getting older, or we don't want to deal with the whole thing, so we don't want to see that mom or dad are getting older. And I've had a number of situations where elderly parents are actually neglected because the kids just are in denial about, their minds going or not being strong enough to be living alone anymore. And I think it's very important that we kick ourselves out of denial and realize that, yes, we're looking in the mirror and our hair is graying and maybe thinning and a little more lines on our face or not as strong of body as we once were. Well, if that's what we're going through, then what does mom or dad need in terms of support and how are they dealing with it? Very often they're dealing with it a lot better. There's a book I actually gave my mom a few years ago called The Book of Mother's Wisdom, edited by Laurel Hoffman. And Maternal Advice from the Queen of Sheba to Princess Diana. And it has different topics and real people saying, people of our culture today or historically who've written about certain things about their own parents. And there's one section here called Coping Well with Aging. And it's actually about a mother and daughter named Sidoni Colette and her daughter Sidoni Gabrielle. They're not people who I know, but it's an important topic. And it says, the French writer Sidoni Gabrielle, known as Colette, stands among the literary giants of the 20th century. Born in Saint-Savoie, she wrote her early books in collaboration with her first husband, Henri Gautier-Villars. After their divorce in 1906, she appeared in music halls as a dancer and mime, then settled into full-time writing. Her most famous novels included the semi-autobiographical Claudine series, Cherie and Gigi. Oh, now I know who she is. Which all vividly portray women in love and jealous affairs. Even after achieving fame, Colette remained very close to her mother, Sido, and cited the following letter written by Sido in her mid-70s as exemplifying her mother's ability to cope admirably with aging. And the letter reads, "Sir, you asked me to come and spend a week with you, which means I would be near my daughter, whom I adore. You who live with her know how rarely I see her, how much her presence delights me, and I'm touched that you should ask me to come and see her. All the same, I'm not going to accept your kind invitation, for the time being, at any rate. The reason is that my pink cactus is probably going to flower. It's a very rare plant I've been given, and I'm told that in our climate, it flowers only once every 4 years. Now, I am already a very old woman, and if I went away when my pink cactus is about to flower, I am certain I shouldn't see a flower again. So I beg you, sir, to accept my sincere thanks and my regrets, together with my kind regards." That's the end of the letter. As a middle-aged woman, Colette commented about her mother's letter in this way: "Whenever I feel myself inferior to everything about me, threatened by my own mediocrity, frightened by the discovery that a muscle is losing its strength, a desire its power, or a pain the keen edge of its bite, I can still hold up my head and say to myself, I am the daughter of the woman who wrote this letter, that letter, and so many more that I've kept. This one tells me in 10 lines that at the age of 76, she was planning journeys and undertaking them, but that waiting for the possible bursting into bloom of a tropical flower held everything up and silenced even her heart made for love. Let me not forget that I am the daughter of a woman who bent her head, trembling, between the blades of a cactus, her wrinkled face full of ecstasy over the promise of a flower, a woman who herself never ceased to flower, untiringly, during 3/4 of a century." That is a woman who is obviously getting frailer in her 70s and still in the moment appreciating the blooming of a flower. Now, one of the things I'm surprising my mother with is I've been the keeper of the family archives, so to speak. You know, I think every family has a suitcase with all the old family photos. And I've been the one that's been schlepping it around over the years as I've been moving. And in that suitcase was a composition book that my mother wrote, poems and prose, when she was 17, 18, 19, and 20 years old. And many of them are still in her own handwriting. And so, to surprise her, which I know she hasn't seen this book in 60 years, and she may be a little bit embarrassed about the youth of this writing, but she obviously sent some of these things in for publication in magazines, because at least one rejection letter to one of the poems in the, you know, stuffed in the book. It's a very powerful book. It speaks of love. It speaks of God. It speaks of creativity and playfulness. And this, in doing this book, and a friend of mine's helping me get it all together and scanning in a lot of photos of her throughout her 80 years, so it's going to be quite a surprise, and it's been quite an undertaking, but, you know, certainly well worth it. I wrote this introduction and this foreword. And this is to my mother, the introduction to the book, which I'm kind of tongue-in-cheek here. Though lost to the world forever, thought lost to the world forever, this volume contains the heartfelt writings of the great mid-century author Edith Evelyn Dickman. Recently found locked away in a vault hidden from the world for over 60 years, the prose and poetry in this book will provide you with insights into the mind and heart of Ms. Dickman. Her writings, though few in number, will offer you an opportunity to see the world through the eyes of a teenage girl as she blossoms into womanhood during a tumultuous period in our history as the U.S. enters into World War II. And in the foreword, which I won't read the whole thing, I talked about this book being published to honor Edith Evelyn Dickman Altshuler on the momentous occasion of her 80th birthday. And I go on to say, Edith is a soul always seeking adventure and desiring to fulfill her purpose of caring for and supporting others' dreams while never losing sight of her own. Her sense of compassion, service, and integrity has been an inspiration to all who know her, especially her adoring three sons. All three sons are truly grateful for her love and support throughout their lives. She can be proud of the values and sense of purpose all have learned from her and are now expressing in their own lives and careers. It is a joy to see, for the world to see, this now being passed to the newest generation through her grandson, Max. Still inspiring in her golden years, who would have thought that finding a soulmate and companion would be next on her journey at age 80? Sharing this time with Tony Barardi has demonstrated that God always provides an outlet and expression for love. May Edith always be the guiding light that she is and enjoy the love of her family, friends, and sweetheart Tony. And again, that's the sense of adventure. At age 78, and her boyfriend Tony is going to be 87 the day before she turns 80, two people meet and fall in love and move in together. And never saying that life is over at 80. My mother used to say, you know, it's an old expression, life begins at 40. So at 40 she took her first plane trip, got a nose job, did all these things that she wanted to do. Well, here she is at 80, still living fully, still traveling when she can, and falling in love and starting a new life together. They've been together for about 2 years. They're buying a house together at 87 and 80. And life is not over by any means. That's the inspiration of Edith Evelyn Dickman Altshuler. So stay tuned. We're going to take another quick break here, and we'll be right back with some closing thoughts. Thanks. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. In the closing moments of the show this week, talking about Mom. And I'm actually going to let Mom do some talking, actually. I'm going to read a couple of the pieces from this composition book that she wrote when she was 17, 18 years old. And actually, she got married to my dad, although they've been divorced for quite a while. They stayed married for 30 years. But she got married, they were high school sweethearts, and she got married when she was 18 and he was 19, and it was 3 days before he was shipped overseas to North Africa during World War II. And so her wedding consisted of her, my dad, and his regiment down in Georgia. She took a train down, they got married, and he got shipped overseas, and she came back to her parents and waited out the war for him. And so some of the poems in here she actually wrote to him while he was overseas. And, but this one is called Life is Like That. Remember, this is a 17-year-old back in 1940 writing this, 41. A tall building all lights out, but a few here and there expressing brightness. Such is life, a long period of blackness with a few bright moments now and then. A fire is lit and burns. It does not go out unless something unforeseen happens to it. Then it flickers and may die. It is If it is left burning, it will continue down to its last ember and then will die. Life is like that. Remember, that was written during wartime, or the verge of war. And this one's called God's Creations. God has created beautiful things in every person's land. He put the sun in the sky above and silver upon the sand. The moon and stars have their own appeal to lovers everywhere, and one cannot forget the fact that trees can be compared to the babbling brook and the fish's nook and the green grass wet with dew and the little white cottage after the rain that sparkles with a rainbow hue. Yes, people are blinded with their own concerns and cannot realize that if they stop to look around, they'd find real paradise. That was written by Edith Dickman when she was about 18 years old, back in the early 40s. And the last one I'm going to read is Friendship. What difference does it make how we earn our living? A man can still have friends, although his power for giving isn't what it should be. For liking people for what they are and not for what they own is having a trait of character very rarely known. A true friend is worth his weight in gold that money cannot buy. The sweet things in life cannot be had if you are lonely and cry. So listen, lonely people, never have a care. Find yourself a friend that's true and be happy or beware. So, those are written by Edith Dickman. I want to leave you with some closing thoughts. And that is, like I said, all of us have some things we can still hold on to that gives us space for anger and pain about our childhood, about our parents. But at some point, the blame needs to stop and acceptance occur in order for you to move on with your own life. And if you don't do that, you're destined to repeat the patterns that you're so angry over. You will repeat them because you have them so ingrained in your anger and your fear that you'll never be able to find your own happiness. Now, forgiveness, even though it's very important, does not mean that you forgive an abuser and will let that abuser back into your life to continue doing it. Forgiveness means that you get the reality of what went on, you find a neutral place as best as you can, and you keep the boundaries set so that you can learn to distinguish between healthy people and unhealthy people and invite the healthy ones in to share in your joy, to share in your happiness, to share in a sense of aliveness that is just so important for all of us. A lot of people think, well, if I forgive my abusive parent or my distant parent, then I have to keep enduring it. That's not what we're saying at all. That acknowledging the fact that some people are not willing to take a look at their own things and not willing to see that what they're doing is hurtful to others, and they continue to do it. So you need to acknowledge it. You need to see that that's who they are and that's what they do. But that's not who you are. You have something more because you're choosing to be conscious. You're choosing not to continue to be what you perceive yourself as, a victim. You're choosing to rise up above it and to tap into your true essence, the spirit within you, the sense of joy that can be there, so that you become a role model and inspiration to others like my mom has been to me. Do this before it's too late. Get the help you need, and listen next week as I'll be back. This is Stuart Altshuler, and Tell the Truth Faster. Thanks for listening tonight.